Well, thank you all for coming to our session. We are the Spells. We have been married for 18 years. We've got three kids, 14, 12, and 9.
Yes.
And we have been part of High Altitude, a class at that meets during the evening service for 17 years. So we spent the first year of our marriage kind of looking for a church, and we actually landed with our class before we landed with the church. We were completely bought in. We were going to a small group from the class, and then actually kind of took the church to get the class, to be honest. So High Altitude was actually created in 2005, so this is its 20th anniversary this year. And it started as a newlywed or close class, and now we've got folks that are graduating their youngest child this year and sending them off to college. So we've seen kind of a good range there for sure. We took over directing in 2020, and we're proof that if you just hang around long enough, they'll put you in charge of something. So this is our current iteration of the class. I say current iteration because with, you know, 20 years, there's been a lot of folks kind of come and go. This is our class Christmas party. And we've watched as God has used some people in the class to really build that community and really do amazing things. It's been a real blessing to us, I would say, you know, just getting to witness that. There's some couples that I'll kind of shout out right now, Ryan and Stacy Volkmer, that really took some lessons from the fraternity that they were part of. They were part of some Christian fraternities in college, and those lessons they took and kind of integrated into our class. And so I would say, contrary to what they said on stage, we're not the experts, but we've watched the experts, and we're going to do what successful people do, is we're going to pass their work off as our own. Heather is also the director of a homeschool group, CC Brazier.
I homeschool all three of our kids and have since the beginning, and for the last 10 years, I've been building a homeschool community on the southwest part of town. So not only do we have experience kind of helping build community in LBS, but also I've seen kind of building community in that avenue as well.
So caveat, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. So again, we're not the experts, but we've observed a lot, and we're just going to try to share those things that we've seen with you. So as we started kind of thinking about this topic, and just kind of digging into this a little bit, it occurred to me there's like more people alive than ever before, but we're lonelier than ever before. There was some stats that came out. The Surgeon General declared a loneliness epidemic. And some of the things that were kind of startling to me, one of them was 57% of Americans report eating all meals alone, which is just startling. 52% of Americans feel lonely, and 58% of Americans reported that they sometimes or always feel like no one knows them well. And community is supposed to be the antidote for this. That's what's supposed to kind of fill that need to where you're known and you feel known by other people and heard. And as the need for community has increased, you can actually see the frequency, the word frequency history here from Wolfram Alpha. Sorry, I didn't want to pay for the really good looking graph. This is the free one that I could clip from their site. But this shows just the interest in the word growing over the 20th century. This actually isn't something a lot of people would blame on like technology. But there's a lot of evidence to say that it's not just a technology issue. It actually started before social media, before iPhones, and before all of that. And as that need has come to the front, like there's been a lot of companies that are trying to rush to actually meet that need. So the social media is actually trying to fit into that niche. But that's not going to work, right? There's only one real mission statement on this board that I think would actually work, and that's the one from Houston's First, to be a relevant biblical community. No one goes to Starbucks, buys a latte, and thinks that they're part of any community. So we looked at the Acts model just to try to get some sense of how the early church worked. And we came to realize that there was a lot of building blocks, a lot of stuff that we saw from Acts and the early church that kind of fit into High Altitude and what we saw the early leaders there do and some of the other, the teachers and all really plug in. So Acts 2:42, and they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And Acts 2:46, and day by day attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts. We're often very good as LBS classes, I think, at devoting ourselves to the apostles' teaching. That's kind of like the first and forefront. That's the focus of a lot of classes. But a lot of the other things that are part of these verses get kind of missing kind of in the mix. And we'll kind of talk about those. It's the breaking of bread in homes, attending the temple together, the day by day that gets kind of missed a lot of times. So this doing life together, this was an early slogan from our class that really, like, it was something that kept coming up. And I think there's really no better definition for community is like doing life together. So, all right.
So now we're going to talk about some of the things that it takes to build community outside the LBS hour. And the first thing it takes is sacrifice. It is not convenient to build community outside of the LBS hour. We all have our own agendas and things on our schedules. And especially if you have classes with younger kids in the mix, everyone's busy and they have things that they're doing. But it really takes a sacrifice of time and energy and your own desires to be able to build that community outside the LBS hour. And even oftentimes, it comes at sacrificing other good things. Like, there's nothing wrong with some of the things that you might have to say no to in order to say yes to spending time with the people in your LBS. Community takes a place to gather. This is where identifying people in your LBS that have a gift of hospitality is crucial. There is just something very sweet about being in people's homes versus in like a room like this. It's just more intimate. There isn't a timetable that you have to stick to or a schedule that you're on. And, you know, and I'll, this is my personal thing, is I think so many times we see things like, oh, magazine worthy houses and, you know, spaces that are beautiful, but you don't have to have those things to be hospitable. Some of the greatest times we had were, I mean, we lived in a 1950s original house, 1700 square feet, and we would have 60 people from our Life Bible study with all their kids in our home. And it, I mean, you know,
It's
chaos. It does. It's just crazy. But you don't have to have a beautiful space or a big home or even a lot of money to be hospitable to people. You can plan events that are potlucks and people bring things, but just opening up your home and having a place to gather that people feel comfortable coming builds a lot of community and bonds outside of that LBS hour.
We've seen this. We've been partnering with the college ministry, and we've been inviting them in. And this is a really big deal. You forget, like, as a college student, you often have a lot of time, but there's not a lot of spaces to meet with a lot of people. And just opening up our home has been a huge thing. Like, they've been able to kind of gather there and host their small groups and that sort of thing. It's been very good.
And here's the big one. This is the thing that actually gets people in the door. Community takes food. And I mean, I say that a little flippantly, but it's so true. There is something so sweet and so intimate about breaking bread together and having a meal together. And it kind of takes down some of the defenses a little bit with people. And I'll tell you what, we actually have a meal in our Life Bible study every single week. Somebody brings food, and we, half of our class is spent sitting down together, eating together, and just talking and getting to know each other. And that's the same thing at small groups. We have dinner together. When we meet together outside, you know, for parties and gatherings, it's always, there's that central thing of food. And so food really does bring people together. And Jeremy will go through some of the biblical examples of that.
Yeah, as we were kind of preparing for this, like that's in the verses from Acts, it actually talks about the breaking of bread, and it mentions that twice. And as I was thinking through, if you think about God's interaction with man, whenever he comes to meet with Abraham, there's a meal, there's, you know, a fattened calf. Jesus has the Lord's Supper, of course, but then there's, you know, just instances whenever he's basically getting repentance from Peter. He's grilling fish just there on the beach. Like, food is actually kind of a big part of how God interacts with his people. And it's, I think, one of those things that does make a huge difference.
Community also takes time, and not just structured time, but time where it's unplanned, it's spontaneous. And I think a lot of times this one is the hardest thing to give up for a lot of people. We tend to kind of hold on to our time very tightly because there's not a lot of it if you're busy, especially if you're working and, like I said, have kids that you're doing all the activities. But that is absolutely how people feel loved, is when you spend time with them. And there's just no other substitute for that. One of the biggest ways that you can do that is through small groups. And that's the thing that, I mean, like we said, that's what brought us into Houston's First, was the fact that we joined a small group. We weren't even part of the class or anything. Somebody invited us to come as a newly married couple to meet with them. And that's how we found community. And a big thing is, so when we talk about small groups, we have led small groups. We've been a part of so many small groups. We've done them in our home. We've done men's small groups. We've done women's small groups. We've done small groups in every iteration. And the most successful small group that we had building community was one with the whole family, where we're not splitting up. And two, we met every single week. And I know that seems, you're like, whoa, that's a lot. That's a huge commitment. But the thing that we found is, because it was every single week, it just was part of your weekly routine. People missed less frequently. And if you did miss, it wasn't a month or two before you saw your small group again. And so this was really good. It's also really good because you can't hide a lot of things when you're seeing people every single week. There's more accountability there. When you go 2 or 3 weeks without seeing someone, you can kind of be like, oh, everything's fine. But if you're seeing someone every single week, sharing a meal with them in an intimate context, it's harder to hide things from your accountability partners and the people around you. And that's really what bonds you together, is sharing those burdens together, praying together, all those things. And so I would encourage you, I know it sounds a little dramatic, but if you're thinking about small groups, I'd really encourage you to think about going ahead and making the commitment of time to do it once a week.
Yeah, that's the, I mean, in the service, he was talking about like LBS being a small group. We run between like 25 and 30 people in our LBS every week. I think, you know, to really get intimate, you've got to have it even smaller than that. And I know there's some in the here, that have talked about like having 80 or 90 in a particular LBS. I think that's one of the keys there, is that in order to spend that time, you do have to make it smaller and get a little fewer groups.
Community takes prayer. We have seen God just work so mightily, just having time to pray over each other, whether that's in small groups, whether that's in class. One of the things we do in our class is we do prayer and potluck on the first of every month. Everyone brings a dish, and we spend the entire class praying over each other and praying for things going on in our life or about things that our class has a heart for. And so this is really, really impactful. We have had prayer nights when we've had members of our class on hospice with cancer. We've had prayer nights to, you know, for marriages who were at a crossroads, who really need God's intervention to save it. We've had not just the hard things though. Just this past year we moved and we invited our class over the night we closed on our house, and they came and they prayed blessings over our empty house, and we had pizza on the floor. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, necessarily a burden, but even celebrations, just coming and praying things into people's lives and allowing God to work through that, praying over our kids and praying over illnesses, just taking the time to do that, praying over missions trips that are happening, people, you know, people that just need the support. And it doesn't have to be in the LBS hour. A lot of times it takes place outside of that.
It also creates an openness between people, that prayer and the ability for people to open up to one another is kind of one of those keys, and gets it away from being kind of the superficial small talk sort of dynamic that you can have. All right. These are some building blocks that we've seen work over the years. And these are just some ideas, some things that, you know, you can use if you're directing or teaching an LBS class, some things that you can use. The first thing I've seen our class bond probably most over missions trips. A lot of those core small groups and all that we were talking about, like we took early on, there was some living water trips to Nicaragua. And those built a lot of long-lasting relationships there. There's been trips to China and most recently South Asia that our class has participated in. And during each one of those times, like those groups of people, you can just see them come together and there's like that shared experience. And then in addition, we do events monthly, the Faith Center. That's a good way. The mission trips, it's getting a little more possible with the kids getting older, but trying to get missions opportunities and missions trips with some of the kids was difficult back years ago. I think they're doing more family trips now. But the church opens up a lot of opportunities. The Faith Center is a really good one where, you know, the kids can get back there and stack cans and that sort of thing there.
Yeah, we have a standing, once a month, our class is scheduled, just a standing first of every month. Our class shows up to serve at the Faith Center, and it's not the same people every time. And I mean, there are some people that are always there, but there's kind of a rotation of people. It's not planned who's going to be there. It's just whoever is available show up, and some people aren't planning on it and show up anyway. But it doesn't also, so the church does a great job of having ways to serve together that you don't have to go reinvent the wheel and plan it yourself. Because I know that as leaders in the class, it's very difficult to find the time and the energy and the people to plan those events. So I would say just get on the church website, email the pastor who's in charge of your department and say, what service opportunities are there for our class? We want to serve together, and we want to do it regularly, you know, not just every once in a while. Another way to do it is Vacation Bible School. I know our class alone, we serve in one, if not three to four classes every Vacation Bible School, and we serve together so that we're serving together. And we go to camps with the kids together. And you do not have to have young children to be camp counselors. The church always needs people to go to camp with the kids. And if you do it with people from your Life Bible study, it just builds bonds that you can't get in the hour that you're here on Sunday. But don't try to reinvent the wheel. Really use what the church already has available and just plug your class in to those opportunities. Another one is dinner eights. This is something that you can do. It doesn't have to be couples. It can be eight, you know, singles or four or six, whatever number works well for your class. And this really should be used as a springboard to have deeper relationships. And it just allows you to meet more people in the class and have interactions with them past the small talk. This is something that we did early on in the class when we didn't have a lot of kids. So I think it would work best for those who kind of have kids out of the house or those who don't have kids yet. But it's a little hairy when you start adding the four and five kids for each family, but it works really well for that age. And I can see it working really well as we kind of graduate kids out and we become more empty nesters as well.
Again, it just gives you an opportunity to kind of get smaller instead of like with the larger group. Brag on God.
Yes.
Did y'all ever think about having somebody else from the other class do the babysitting or something for kids? I mean, we did dinner rates back in the 80s. And I don't know what we did with our kids. They didn't go with us, okay? Yes. But it was a good way because we had a large deal. Dinner rate was a very good way of getting to know people. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what dinner rates are?
So essentially, yeah. So if it's couples, you have four couples. If it's singles, you would have eight singles or, you know, and you essentially run like a 4-month commitment in each couple. Or if it's singles, you might run it 8 months and say each person takes the responsibility of planning the outing. And, you know, it can be in a home. It can be out to eat, whatever works for that. But they schedule it. And so you run, we would sign up and
it's for randomly,
4 months.
Basically, whoever wants to participate, they would kind of sign names. Up and then they draw random names. And then it's like that's the dinner group for the next, you know, for the next quarter.
Okay. So it gives you a little bit more. It's better than just one dinner together. You know, you get repeated dinners together with that same group over the course of 4 months or so. And it just gives you an opportunity to get together. And it's not too much of a time commitment for people.
And it's once a month.
Mm-hmm. So you would stay in that same group for like the 4 months. And then if it's couples and each couple would take turns hosting. If it's singles, then you could even do it 8 months and it would last most of the year. And you would get together once a month.
You can decide like whether I think we would do it kind of like twice a year. So it wouldn't be like necessarily a constant thing. But once that rotation was set, you know, for that quarter, then, you know, you'd have to wait. If someone didn't sign up, they'd have to wait until the next time to get into it.
Yeah. You take this next one.
Yeah. Brag on God. This, I don't know who came up with this in our class. I don't know if they copied it from someone else, but this has been some of our best moments that I can remember has been Brag on God nights. And that's just you take all of the chairs and just circle them up or kind of put them in a square and you give people the opportunity to brag on God. And it has been one of the things that just it's been very powerful to give people the opportunity to kind of get up and just, you know, share their heart about the things that God's done in their life, the healing, the, you know, the broken marriages that have been restored. And it's every time there's always like there's something shocking because it gives, you know, people who normally maybe wouldn't share something like that. It gives them a forum and an opportunity to kind of stand up and share those things. And it has been amazing.
Yeah, community really takes vulnerability with each other. If you're not willing to share and kind of go deeper, it's hard to really get past that surface level. So this is really a way that nobody's going to get up and brag on like very surface level. Like there were deep, deep things that were shared. And there were so many times where somebody would share something and somebody would start crying and say, me too. And it just, there were stories of sobriety and, God, you know, healing addiction and all sorts of things. And then you just never know who needs that connection with that person and hearing that their story mirrors their own. And so that has been really impactful for people making connections, because that's not something you just randomly talk about, you know, over dinner. It just really allows people to hear those deeper stories and more testimonies that allows them to connect together. Holiday parties. This is big in our class. I mean, people do not miss our holiday parties. We have pretty much perfect attendance in our class at our Christmas party. And that's with everybody getting babysitters and everything. This is super important too. If you have a class that has kids in it, is having a time at least once a year where it's just adults, because we all love our kids. We do, but they interrupt you when you're trying to actually talk. And so, excuse me. So it's so important to just have reasons to celebrate together. I mean, the Bible has feasts, right? These are our feasts. And so we do an Easter egg hunt, as we do a huge outdoor Easter egg hunt potluck at Easter. We have so many people show up, and we just spend hours outside hanging out together. We throw Super Bowl parties, any holiday or excuse to get together, our classes together. Like, we see each other more than we see our families, because this is our family, you know, and, everybody loves it. And there's still a lot of food. Like, there's a lot of food in that.
So impromptu gatherings. I would say this and group chats go along very, very well together. Those, I should have probably put those next to each other. This is just, you know, having a avenue of just the ability to say, hey, it's, you know, it's Friday night. We're going to go to dinner. Does anybody else want to join? You know, just throwing it out there on, we use in our class, we use Signal.
We have a ladies and a men's, because the men don't want to hear all the things the ladies are talking about, all the time. Cause we talk a lot more than the men.
Yeah. There's one that kind of crosses over and I mute that one. So, yeah, there's the impromptu gatherings. There's, I call it man movie night. Like, if there's a random weekend where she and the kids happen to be out and, you know, I want to invite the guys over, like, hey, you know, going to do the man movie night, come over, you know. And this has been really good. Just that, yes, that openness to say, hey, just come over, share life, you know, let's get a burger, whatever.
I think it's important to note too, that this allows people who are not leadership in the class to still take part in taking ownership of, like, creating gatherings. You don't have to be on leadership to get people together in the class. And this gives the people who are not necessarily on LBS leadership teams the ability to say, hey, why don't y'all come over to my house? For example, just today, one of the women in the class messaged out and said, I want to host a Galentine's brunch. I want all the ladies to come over. And that wouldn't happen if you didn't have an avenue to, like, put that out there. And it also allows us a way for those couples who have just newly joined, they're seeing what's going on in the class and they can feel invited, because sometimes you don't always see everybody who's come, you know, and you may not, it's easy to miss inviting people if you're just inviting select people. So the group chat's really good about making sure that everyone is included all the time and have the opportunity to come to the social things outside of LBS without you having to try to remember exactly, you know, all the people that you need to invite. And it keeps people from being missed, for sure.
Do you put them on the group chat when they first visit? Or
about the second time, if they say, hey, we really want to be a part of the class, we'll put them on the group chat. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because
yes,
it's awkward. Can get awkward.
Yes,
you put them too soon.
We also share a lot of prayer requests on here. Like, this is how we know what's going on in each other's lives. At least the ladies do. I don't know about the men, but the women are constantly like, "I need prayer for this," you know. And so, and people will chat back like a 3-page prayer in the signal, you know, like they pray for them right there and they pray with words. It's not just, oh yeah, we'll pray for that. Like we have written out prayers for people. And this is also a good way to just saturate the class in prayer and just know what's going on and increase that vulnerability.
Retreats, we've seen, like we've done the men and women's retreats. Those were really important whenever the kids were small, because it just simplified like the childcare situation. Now we like to do kind of the big family all together, and that is that's a huge success every year, and that's built a lot of community. We've seen a lot of folks that are kind of on the periphery, and then you know they come to the retreat, and all of a sudden it kind of like just bonds them more with everyone.
There's something about staying up till 2 a.m. with kids running around that just bonds you together. So we, as a class, we rent out the Hunt Retreat once a year. And each family gets a room. And so 9 families get to stay overnight, but then anybody can come for the day on Saturday. And we eat together. And when I say we eat, we like eat. Mm-hmm. We eat all day long.
Some of the kids eat way too much.
Yes. Somebody always is sick by the end of it. It's just, you know. But you come away with stories, right? And that's what you went through something together, you know, bonding over your kids being up at the middle of the night getting sick because they ate, you know, 5 bags of Takis or whatever it is. True story. And that's really been, but back when it was, you know, the men and the women, like the men would talk about things that they wouldn't talk about kind of in a mixed setting, and the women the same thing. I remember one retreat we had one sweet woman like confess some heavy sin in her life, and we were able to come around and pray for her, and you know, but she felt more comfortable because it was the women only, you know. And just so many things like that from the retreats. But that's a big one too. It's just getting time to get away together as a class.
How far in advance do you have to book?
A year.
We book a year out. So every year when we try to keep the same weekend so that everybody knows it's coming, mm-hmm. and they can plan accordingly.
You have to work with the director, the like we work with Brad, the married young adult director, and talk to them, and they can get like the next date that's available out there.
But it's definitely more affordable than everybody trying to get hotels and plan, you know. And everything's set up for large groups.
And do y'all stay both nights, Friday and
we
Saturday?
We do. Mm-hmm.
What do they charge for that?
It is $80 per night per room.
Per room.
And so what we do is just charge for each one of the adults, and the kids get it for free. But everyone has to kind of register. They want a complete thing with that.
And then you pay a day rate if you come for the day. That's less expensive.
The last thing, a core group of extroverts, you're going to need that. So what you're going to want to do is look around in the service and find someone smiling and happy and talking to people, and you're going to grab them and drag them to your class, because they're going to be necessary. we've got several different couples that function as that, and they're the ones that, you know, whenever a new person comes in, they're all like, hey, how you doing? And it just, you know, you can see them like just gravitate and help out with, you know, making people feel welcome.
But I'm going to brag on Jeremy a little bit, though. He is not an extrovert. He is an introvert. But he puts together more hangouts and time and social time outside of LBS. He's just really good about bringing people together. And then once they're in the setting, he lets the extroverts take over. But you don't have to be an extrovert to gather people together. You can be an introvert who's just really diligent about reaching out and creating opportunities for people to spend time together.
So kind of to start wrapping it up, as we were talking through this and thinking through this and kind of studying and praying, I came across some stuff that was really interesting. And the reason that I believe and others believe that we're having such a problem with loneliness in American society is because community and kind of the American way are kind of at odds, right? We're a individualistic, consumer-driven society. And that is great for things like coffee selection. I love walking into HEB and having, like, you know, all of the different types of coffees and all, like, that's amazing. But whenever it comes to community, a lot of times there's kind of a concept. You'll see people come in and they're looking for a particular package. You know, they're looking for the particular flavor. And what you're going to need to do as a an LBS leader is switch that from a, like, a consumer-driven, like, you know, what is the flavor, to getting them to kind of plug in the piece that's missing, that they're looking for. So if they're looking for something, if they're asking about something, be really quick to say, hey, yeah, that would be great. What can you do? And we've actually seen this work. There's a couple that wanted to do a, they started talking about, is there a middle school small group? And we're like, well, yeah, start one. That would be great. They had four kids at the time. They're all middle school or close. Now they're like high school, middle school age. And this was something they thought would be really great. And so they were like, okay, sure. And they started that, and that has been a huge deal. Our kids will not let us forget whenever it's higher altitude night. We tried to call it low altitude. The kids renamed it higher altitude, and they do praise and worship together. They've started, like, a little, one will play the clarinet, one will the violin, the guitar. So they do praise and worship, and they have, like, a middle school small group night, and they absolutely love it.
And one of the things about this, if you do have a Life Bible study where there's kids involved and it's families, this is a great way to keep those fringe couples involved, because if their kids are involved in a class thing, the parents have to be. We've had so many couples that are kind of on the fringes that can't kind of fall away because their kids are like, no, Mom, I want to do this. I want to be involved. And so that really keeps people connected as well. We have people who show up to class randomly, maybe once every couple of months, but their kids are at higher altitude every other week, and they will stick around and chat with the other adults too. And so this really creates an opportunity for them outside of LBS to stay connected, even when they have the habit of maybe not attending as much.
So last thing I'll kind of share, this, while we were looking through this, I'm a sucker for a good YouTube channel. And there's one that I was listening to over Christmas called Like Stories of Old. And they were highlighting It's a Wonderful Life. And it really, like, I don't know, it just fit perfectly with what we were kind of talking about as we were building this up. And this story is really about the triumph of a community, right? So George Bailey, like, if we're talking about the American individualism, that's what he wants to be. But every time he tries to kind of get out of Bedford Falls, he wants to, you know, knock the dust of this crummy little town off of his shoes and, you know, get out and explore and do all of this stuff. He keeps getting pulled back in. And it's always some sort of sacrifice that pulls him back into this community and back to Bedford Falls. In fact, it's his brother who actually is kind of the traditional hero of this story. Harry's the one that gets to go out and be the football star. He gets to go be the World War II pilot. And George is just stuck there. But it's that community that God uses to actually save him at the end of this story. And we have seen that. Like, I feel like every week our joy meter goes up after, because we're the 4 o'clock, the evening service. We finish up and we do the meal together. And then all of the kids come in and they take out all of the rest of the food. And the class is just full of, like, kids running around. And then some of the kids leave and go down to the lawn and play football or kickball. And we just get to see that, and we get to experience that. And so, you know, if you pour in, you get out way more than you've ever put in. And that's, I mean, this week we got to feel that as we were kind of down under the weather, and we had, you know, friends drop by and just say, hey, here's a meal. And it means a lot.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about the evening service is there's nobody to kick us out of our room because there's no service behind. And so our service now ends at 6:30, but we don't get home till almost 9 o'clock because we're spending time with the people in our class. So if that's going out to lunch after the morning service, if that's, you know, hanging out on the lawn for a little while, just take those opportunities to invest that time with each other. It makes a huge difference.
All right. We're supposed to ask you to fill out a survey. Yeah. And are there any questions?
I'm just curious. Yeah. Of your 20, about 24, 25 people you typically have, like in Houston, like what is your proximity to each other physically?
So a lot of us live, we actually moved to Spring Branch to be closer to our church family. We lived across town on the southwest side in Meyerland for 14 years and drove across town for small group once a week, plus Wednesday night church, plus church. Like we just said, this is our commitment. We're going to do this. We have families that drive in from Pearland. We've had people come in from Baytown before. Okay, so we're all over.
Okay, so people will make the commitment.
Yes.
Okay, so we've talked about that in our class a lot.
When we try to group small groups by proximity to each other. For a while, we had a small group where everybody kind of lived on the southwest side. But then, like I said, we started driving across town to go to the small group that met once a week because we saw the value in the community and them literally doing life together and not just being in every other week kind of, oh, we have small group. But it was a lifeblood thing. It was like, we don't want to miss small group because this is so important to us. And so we made the drive. So for a lot of people, they'll do it, especially when they feel, you know, connected and bonded.
Mm-hmm. Are there other families that do the homeschooling?
Some of them. I would say it did not used to be. More and more are now, but I think statistically that's just across the board happening. I do have a little bit of crossover. I do have some families in our Life Bible Study. They're also in the homeschool community with me, but that was, I met them through church. Like I did. And some of them actually brought from the homeschool community into the church. So there is a little bit of that, but there are public school kids. There are homeschool kids. There's university model kids like Trinity Class School and Second Baptist University model and things like that. So there's really, you know, but the kids, they love each other and they just work around each other's schedules. And so it's a mix.
Sounds like a healthy church. like it should be.
Yeah.
Like community and family. And I totally agree. I'm from Louisiana, so we eat for everything. The dog has the barbecue. It's like everything is surrounded around food, but it does bring people together.
Yeah.
So we thank y'all for sharing those things. It really, I guess, a couple things. So my husband and I teach a blended family class. And one of the things, I am like they call me the hostess of the mostess. Because I love to get, you know, get a good gathering going. However, how it's set up, all of our families have visitations with the kids because we blended. Mm-hmm. And dad might have the kids this weekend. And so it's kind of hard for us to all get their kids together. And so any recommendations on how, I mean, and we've tried several things, but then it just was like maybe two would show up or maybe one couldn't make it. And it was just always a no-go for the kids. And I know a lot of times when the families have their kids on visit for visitation, they want to spend more time with that kid and not a whole bunch of kids.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So any recommendations on how we can still
love
our people?
I think frequency is important, right? It doesn't matter if two people show up. Those two people are going to feel connected. You know, I feel like it doesn't have to be a big thing for it to be impactful. And so if you make the more opportunities people have to come, they feel less like, oh, I've got to give up something. They're like, oh, well, we can catch it next time. So that's the thing with like the meeting every week with the small groups is people feel less like protective of that time because they know they can do it next week or, you know, things like that. So I feel like sometimes it's counterintuitive, but the more you meet and more opportunities there are for people, the more they'll actually end up coming.
I know it just was like a 15-year-old did not want to, a 15-year-old girl did not want to talk to a 7-year-old boy. It's like, we're not doing this. Well, you know, it's,
you know, but our class is so weird. Like the teenagers love hanging out with the little kids. And I don't know if that's because we spend so much time together after class and they're all together, but I don't know if it's because we've just always had a huge family focus in our class, but like the teenagers love the little kids and they will happily like give them piggyback rides and like just all sorts
unless
of things.
Unless it's their sibling.
I'm like, yeah, they don't want to do that with their sibling.
Yeah.
But the other kids, they're happy to do it. I don't know. We just have found that because we do small group as a family, they've just always been wide age ranges. And you'll see the teenagers take the babies and be like, we're going to take the toddlers and go play, you know, and they just take them. And you're like, oh, great. Okay. I get a break. I eat a hot meal. This is great. and I think, like I said, it's really counterintuitive, but the more opportunities there are to meet, the more people will actually feel more comfortable coming. Because it's not as awkward. Like if you're with people every week, you get to know people better. And it's not this weird every other week relationship. You know,
we do a lot of outings together, like the men will get together, the women get together, and we'll get together, you know, as couples, but I just haven't found, haven't seen a good space for where the kids, and a lot of us, you know, there's different age groups, mm-hmm. like some of them, their kids are married with kids, and so mm-hmm. it just kind of like varies. But
I think the meeting in homes helps that a lot because it meets the needs of the wide age ranges. I mean, we have video games for the older kids, but I still have Legos for the little kids, you know, and they just go off and play together. Like we don't even really supervise them. They just do whatever they're going to do. And we hang out. I mean, we do check on them and make sure.
Yeah.
Bye
now.
But,
we pretend we're 80s parents,
but I think meeting in homes makes that easier because you don't have to try to find something. And I think people are more likely to show up to someone's home than they are to an event out somewhere. And I know it's hard. Like, your house is overrun. I get it. Like, we always have broken things whenever, like, we host things. It's just, we've just counted that as the cost of, like, being hospitable is that you're going to have to plunge a toilet or fix something that's broken or patch a hole in the wall. True story. First night in the house. When they came over to pray over our house, we had holes in the wall.
And they ripped a door off the hinge.
Yeah, and ripped a door off the hinge. But you know what? The house is still standing, yeah. And we have a sweet memory. So,
does anybody, your situation's a little different than ours. Does anybody else have any maybe wisdom to kind of pour into the situation?
We have pretty frequent get-togethers, and we're an older class. We're not of the same age you guys are. A couple of things that drew my attention. I think you mentioned a model or a magazine-worthy house to have an event. And everything. We have some folks that are, you know, well off and do things like that. But I'm of the persuasion that if you don't have it in somebody's model, perfect, absolutely wonderful home, it invites other people to say, we can do that at my house, too.
Yes.
And then secondly, we've had gatherings, and you're right, food. You got to have food. You got to have food. Whenever we get together and prepare the food together, that really seems to bond people. Chopping a salad, putting barbecue on the grill, whatever the case may be, not just show up and eat. Mm-hmm. It's not a restaurant you're coming to. We're right. going to do this together. I think that's pretty important.
Yeah, we do that a lot with the retreat. Actually, like a lot of the families, like will just get up and start helping, and they'll prepare the meals. Yeah,
we just, you know, we used to do a beach bash, you know, in the summer, and that was one of the things we did. Hey, somebody's going to do homemade ice cream, right, Susan? And you know, somebody else is going to do salads or whatever. And again, it's just. The shoulder to shoulder preparing, yes. And also cleaning as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like you said, doing life together. That yes. was it. And the frequency of it. have it every opportunity. So you miss this one, no big deal. You'll make the next one or the next one. We're going to continue to do this. So.
And I will also say you don't have to have an event to do life together. Like, I mean, I've gone grocery shopping with other women in the class. Like, it doesn't have, just invite people to do the things you're already doing. And it doesn't have to be something that's like super planned. It can be like, hey, I'm going to Costco. Anybody want to go today? Or, you know, like we're going to go, you know, out hunting or to the beach, or it doesn't have to be an event. It can just be everyday life stuff. But just including other people in it and doing life together makes such a big difference.
How are we on time?
Okay.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you. I guess let me pray and we can finish it up. Father, we just thank you for a room full of leaders wanting to pour into just innumerable classes here in the church. I pray for them. I pray blessings on their classes. I pray that you would be with them, give them the wisdom they need to pour into those close to them, that they can start the movement that the pastor was talking about earlier. We thank you for this time. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you.